I'd like to introduce to you your Congress hostess, a lady whom you all know, Mary Sue Hubbard. I see you have some friends in the audience, or a clack or something. Mary Sue is now the organizational secretary of the FC, and gone upstairs there, and we're getting a new look, central organization-wise. And although she'll be over in England for a while this spring, she will continue to be the org sec. So you can applaud that one, too. I'd like to introduce to you now your Congress manager. I think Marilyn has put on a very good show here for you, hasn't she? I'd introduce the rest of the staff, but this is a short Congress. And we have an awful lot of staff. But, I'd like somebody to take a bow on the sidelines, the new HCO secretary, Washington. Stand up, Marcia. And another promotion in keeping with the general plan of HCOs and so on. There are three types of HCO office now. There's HCO Worldwide, HCO Continental, and HCO Local Area. The Continental HCO Executive Secretary for America, that you will have to argue with if you want to get anything straightened out, Millie Galusha. Now, it's a very, very remarkable fact, but we haven't been able to find Miss Dean since a couple of weeks ago. She up and took the horrible plunge, and the last lecture, which I gave about overt acts and motivators and so forth, we'll hope that keeps her marital life straight. Well, this is the last lecture of this, as I have seen it, a very successful Congress. It's been very pleasing to talk to you. I have had some data for you, as you noticed. You can digest all that, you're really doing good. Now, let me give you a little precaution about the thing. You can go ahead and run engrams if you want to, without taking the ACC. You can go ahead and do that. It just means the HGC, get more pre-clears. But don't please downgrade or cancel out the importance of clearing the way we were clearing in the 20th ACC, because this is very important. And don't downgrade the value of that first dynamic, that first dynamic process I gave you. Don't devaluate that. Don't think that repetitive command auditing, command after command, taking it up exactly according to comm course formula and so forth, won't get PCs there. It will. And I seriously doubt if anybody could audit engrams widely and with great success without having the equivalent levels of skill of HCA, HPA abroad, and HCS or BSCN. These levels of skill are very, very necessary levels of skill. If you're doing any auditing at all, and you're not certified as an auditor, may I please call your attention to a certificate known as HAS, and may I please call attention to all validated auditors that any validated auditor can teach an HAS course, and the certificate will be issued by HCO Washington or Los Angeles for free nothing. Now, that's good news. We don't want people around auditing unless they have had an HAS course, because we want them to get results. We want them to get good results. And we can do a better job today with a person who just had an HAS course and some of the basic processes than we got in 1950 with the usual book auditor. And today the HAS is a book auditor. It means Hubbard Apprentice Scientologist. Person has had a COM course, he can have a certificate as a Hubbard Apprentice Scientologist. And he can run anything he wants to, anything he can get away with. He'll soon scale it down to relatively simple processes because it takes quite a bit of doing. It takes quite a bit of doing to actually get away with these senior processes. It takes a tremendous amount of doing to get away with engram running Scientology-wise. Actually, it's quite easy and quite beneficial to run engrams by Dianetics. Just old Dianetic processing, just like it says in Book 1. You can get an awful long ways with it. It doesn't pin your PC down particularly. You can get a lot done. You can heal up a lot of things. A lot of things get squared around. There's nothing wrong with that grade at all, but don't confuse that with Scientology engram running. Any more than you would confuse a small gopher or a small mouse with a raging tiger. They just are not the same temper. I don't mean to say that that's so horrible, horrible, and it's so difficult, difficult, but I do say that you can get into things you can't easily get out of. And unless you start auditing somebody for a long period of time with considerable confidence in what you're doing, that level should be left alone, engram auditing. Except if you want to do it by old Dianetic style. Go ahead, go ahead. An HAS can run engrams, Book 1, all he pleases. Now, we're getting our house pretty well in order. We are. I mean, you don't ordinarily see the order that has come about in Scientology or the broadness of its spread throughout the world. Well, we are practically the only empire the world has got right now. That's quite remarkable, and I say that with all seriousness. It's not that I am the head of an empire and all that sort of thing. I am not. We are. But the point is definitely and completely made that today we have nations contracting, not expanding. We have movements contracting, not expanding. People are less and less able to reach. At the same time that we are reaching, we see less and less reach. Now, I don't mean to compare anything we're doing to any political movement such as communism, but communism is a contracting thing right now. It is not gaining. It is losing. Poor Russia. Very sad. But do you know why they wanted to divide up Berlin recently? They couldn't control East Germany anymore. A defeated country was throwing them out. I don't think it had anything to do with our own propaganda that we were putting out into Germany, which was that communism was an old German idea which had been dropped by the Germans 100 years ago. I don't think that had much to do with it. But the point is that most of these movements, you see, are contracting. Now, there's one thing that is expanding, and that's American industry. You're starting to see more and more American industry abroad in spite of the government. And I mean that. I'm not even making a crack. The one thing a government in modern times says is you must not produce. And American industry is heroically producing right into the teeth of it. Americana is going abroad. There is one culture on the face of Earth today that is taking everything in its path, and that is American culture. But this is distinctly different, whether bad or good, is distinctly different from American politics. American politics are not winning. The State Department until recently was telling us, even though you are hated abroad, do the best you can. That's a crude paraphrase of it, but actually with every passport, they issued a statement that Americans are not popular abroad. I have not found this to be the case. Very, very far from it. and I won't say that we have done anything propaganda-wise, such as you must distinguish between an American person and an American government. The American individual and American industry are going one direction, the government's going another direction. I haven't been downgrading the American government broad or doing anything like that. I just tell them it's no better than your own. They understand me. But American culture is expanding. The new British idea is rock and roll. Now, I'm not saying American culture is totally good or totally bad, but it is a culture, and this is something which reaches out across the world. American movies are seen everywhere and preferred above local movies. You see American selling ideas, American advertising ideas, American industrial and merchandising ideas are seen more and more throughout the world. I used to see a GI sit down in front of a dock and say, "Boy, wouldn't I like to own a hamburger stand down here, you know?" He went back and built a hamburger stand. He did. There's hamburger stands and jukeboxes and Coca-Cola all over the world today. It's gotten to a point where I can sit down in a Paris restaurant, order a Coca-Cola and ice in a glass, and get no argument from the waiter. So there are some things in the world which are moving out on an expanding perimeter, but they are cultural things. And with this is moving out a wave of internationalism. Now, we are not really internationalists. An internationalist is somebody who says, peace, peace at any price, no more wars, et cetera, pacifism. It's a codified thing, this philosophy of no borders. We merely say, borders are silly. That's different than internationalism. It's just a stated fact. I don't think they'll be able to keep up the pretense of borders forever, given atom bombs staying in their storehouses. I don't think they'll be able to keep up borders. Very recently, I was issued an unlimited landing permit by the Queen, which is quite interesting. Used to be, they wouldn't even let me in the country. Now they say, come and stay as long as you like. So we are seeing the progress of culture, seeing the progress of ideas, the progress of modern scientific production, the progress of new truth, cultural truth. But we aren't really seeing the expansion of any organizations to amount to anything except one, and that's Scientology. It's a very hard thing to tell anybody here in America. America is a pretty isolated area. Pretty isolated. I mean, people here don't really believe that there's lots more to the world. I'm not saying that critically, because Americans are learning it on and on and on and more and more and more. You're more and more turning up with some guy that's riding next to you in a bus down through Piccadilly, and you say, "I say, old chap, do you have the time?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "I guess about 3 o'clock. You have a virile people with a virile culture in America. But organizationally, the world is on a contracting perimeter. Now, we speak of empire. There is an empire of the mind growing here. It's not an idle thought where I'm concerned. It would grow in spite of anything, but I would hate to see it grow as raggedly as it would grow if it weren't grooved. That leaves us, to a very large degree, with a responsibility. We could do harm in this world if we simply let anything we do and anything we know simply just go out any old way and flop any place it pleased and so on. If we ran a big irresponsibility on this, why, it might be a lot easier on a lot of us. But in the end, it'd kick our teeth in. So, we have this under fair control. You must recognize something. You must recognize something. That you have a responsibility for what you know. I have a responsibility for what I know, and so should you. If man is basically good, who is going to point the way for him to arrive at a level where he can recognize it subjectively and demonstrate it objectively? Now, who's going to point that way? You think I'm going to chip away forever at the ice cutting steps, huh? How about you cutting a few steps, huh? One of the basic things that we face, all of us, is a new adjustment. In your past many lives here on earth, you probably were well adjusted. You probably were. You probably went on and on doing more or less the same thing. But all of a sudden, here's this brand new look. Brand new look. You're not doing what you're accustomed to doing. You're not riding at the same speed that you rode before. You're not handling the same cultural values that you handled before. In this society, burning questions scorch all of us. How do you keep marriages together? That's an interesting one. How do you raise kids? That's an interesting one. How do you hold in check and in democratic balance a government which so outweighs the populace with weapons that you never even dare snarl at it? How do you bring reform to an organization that is totally powerful and is getting more and more ignorant? How do you live in this changing world? Once upon a time, you could pick a scythe up out of the warehouse and go on down the line and take your chance with the mounted knights and somehow or other bring about a social reform. Once in a while, you could win. Once in a while, some principles would triumph over a status quo. But right now, that really isn't possible. How do you hold in line the gains we have made culturally and make more gains? What sort of a culture should we be living in? What sort of a life should we be living? How should we increase our own security? How should we make things more successful? If anything, easier, better, more secure. There's hardly anyone here who's living a life of good security. And the reason that good security isn't discovered is because you have not yet worked out a pattern that you yourself consider secure in the face of advancing scientific technology and advancing cultural pattern changes. That's all. It's just the third dynamic is getting disarranged and rearranged, and the fourth dynamic is getting changed considerably. And none of us have really found our feet in this new change. Now, we ourselves have found our feet better than the fellows in the nearby towns and villages. They haven't found their feet at all. There used to be a miller there, and he ground the flour, and it was a very easy life because somebody brought him four bags of flour, and he ground four, kept one, gave them three. That was his life. Now the farmer has to buy back his own wheat ground from some large company like Pillsbury and pay top price for the thing. He doesn't grind any of his own wheat anymore. His economics are totally bound up in the economics of the nation. His economics are so complicated thereby that he can't himself acquire security. It's gotten to a point where it doesn't do any good to save money for your old age. Government's taken that all off your back, or has it? Will they ever pay you an old age pension? Who knows? Or will the old age pension be so valueless in terms of money by the time it gets to you, it'll buy anything? How do we make a security? What are these cultural values? What happens in a marriage these days? What are the duties of a wife? What are the duties and responsibilities of a wife? What are the duties and responsibilities of a husband? Who can tell? Who can tell any of these things, really? Now, these things were pretty well patterned over the years, over the centuries. And sometime in the middle of the 18th century, they started to fold up, and very few of us have found our feet. I say that in all seriousness. Very few of us have found our feet. You could live life after life in the old days, doing the same thing, going over and over and over it, one way or the other. When you got through with a life, you know what you'd do in the next life, more or less the same thing, successful pattern, you were happy about it, everything was all right. Wasn't anything wrong with it, repetitive, felt good about it. Now all of a sudden you're doing something totally different, totally different values, totally different speeds. Believe me, sports cars do not travel at the speed of a horse. Also, they don't kick you. Different types of things. Now the Russians have gotten busy and started to fire rockets at the sun. I don't know why. They don't see the sun very often. I guess they're mad at it. But this makes a change up into space opera. Now, I'll tell you something about Scientology. They'll never make it into space without us, but I tell you, they won't. The old days, way back when man was going into space, he did it with hypnotism, implantation, heavy duress, and he folded up, and any of these great space societies were built by losing the individual totally. They lost him utterly, and so they lost his initiative, and so they lost anything else that was good about man, and they became criminal societies. I remember a revolution took place long, long, long time ago, space opera revolution. Silliest revolution you ever heard of. The population was revolting for the privilege of being governed. And the hierarchy that had to do with most commerce, distribution, travel, transportation, communication, these things, refused to govern the populace. They said, why should we govern the populace? It's just a lot of trouble. We're making out all right. And the populace revolted for the privilege of being governed. That's certainly pretty different than they have today. The populace revolts in the direction of less government, a more liberal government. Well, in those days, they wanted tighter government. Pretty weird. But most space opera societies go this way. We're in a space age. And that age is being built at the sacrifice of the individual. We alone on Earth today are those who can preserve the individual. We're totally alone in this. There are several committees like civil rights and that sort of thing, and they try to fight against this incursion on individual liberty. They try to enforce the Constitution, do things like that. And they're very sincere, and they're very working at it, but for every bit of pressure that they can exert, or every power that they can develop, somebody is developing some new weapon, some new high-speed missile, something new that overreaches again man's own individual power. Quite an interesting view. It'll become more and more interesting as the years move. But when you begin to sacrifice one thing, the individual, for the good of the society, as has already happened here on Earth, Russia did it. Other nations are following suit. As you begin to sacrifice this individual, you also sacrifice that one thing which is best about individuals, his individual sense of good, his individual sense of responsibility for his own life and guiding it. Now, when that individual no longer feels that he's responsible for his own life, when he's totally cared for by the state, when he's born in some sort of a nursery, and he gets put on board of a spaceship or something of that sort, or in an army, and his indoctrination consists of some hypnotic humbo-jumbo, that's the way it is. You've lost one thing. You've lost leadership. That is the thing that goes, because the individual is the only leader. You cannot have a group leading anything. A group can lead nothing. A group democratically operated can select its leaders, who in turn can govern it. But when they are no longer leaders in a society, whom do they elect? Who is there to elect? Who can help or guide the society in any way? No great mass of people can possibly elect a leader when there are none. There is no leader, you can't elect him. And that's what happens in a society. Individual liberty, individual worth, individual beingness, understanding goes down in front of the tremendous onslaught of modern scientific improvement. Gadgets and guns, dependence on the state, all of these things wipe out the individual. So therefore, in these societies, the thing that suffers is leadership. And where you do not have adequate and responsible leadership, you don't have a society. You have a criminal element. All criminality is the abandonment of all responsibility on one or more dynamics. Then you get criminality. It doesn't matter what they do because they can't do anything. What about a society where no leader can be found who can do anything about anything? He goes play golf. He doesn't do anything. Apathy, apathy, apathy. He doesn't know what else to do, so he kills off a few more 100,000 peasants. There was a criminal leader. Hitler. Worse than Stalin. Had it all made. He had the world in his palm. German chemistry, science, and industry had risen to such a point that Herr Hitler only had to keep a calm, stable government going. And German chemistry and industry would have all but taken the world. He was in a wonderful position. And what did he do? He declared war. Why? He couldn't win. Why couldn't he win? Because he couldn't be responsible for his own state. Millions of human beings died because of that man. And he was not a leader. He was a criminal. And how does a criminal get born and raised? He can only exist where no beingness is granted to the individual. Where personal worth is gone. When everybody thinks he's a dog, he'll elect a dog. So what happens in a space opera society? Oh yes, we have fancier and fancier ways to implant people. We have fancier ways to shoot dogs and Sputniks and Christmas messages into the outer space. Oh yes, yes. We have gadgets and keyboards and countdowns and cracked space helmets. Who is there with enough responsibility to say what is to be done with these things? Or does it all get into some huge Frankenstein monster that somebody has started and nobody can control? Is that the way they go? Does it become some huge beast that goes tromping through the society, crushing everything under its leaden feet? Is that the way this is? Is that what we're going to have again? And I say again very advisedly. So you'll get processed someday if you don't have a good reality on whole track. You'll be sitting there in the pre-clear chair. You'll see. I have a funny feeling that it's all over. Yeah, I have a funny feeling. I have a picture here. I have a picture here of a town under a dome. Whoop, there it went. Well, that was the end of that planet. You ask the fellow, what did you do then? Somebody blew up his planet with atomic bombs and spaceships and so forth. What did you do then? News PC will have to say probably that you went off someplace because there wasn't anybody left that you could contact anymore, and you were alone for a very, very long time. And you finally started to build up again from scratch. And maybe the first trick you learned after that, after you'd forgotten a lot of your technology, was to rub a couple of sticks together and make a fire. So you started all over again. There's nothing wrong with that, but there's a lot wrong with damaging and deteriorating the security of every individual on Earth. There's a lot wrong with that. That itself is a criminal action. What assurance do we have right now that the two greatest nations on Earth will not blow each other up in the next 24 hours? Not a week ago, one of these nations, Russia, was claiming that it was going to declare war and bathe the West in flames. Because what? Because nobody would abandon Berlin, which they could no longer govern. This is responsible action? No, this is the action of a criminal. And that criminal is born when the individual dies. When the individual no longer has worth, when he no longer has freedom of action, when he can no longer think, when he can no longer lead, when he's crushed into some sort of a morass, his number is 4680-2. Societies of that character don't like individualists. I remember a famous story called "He Didn't Like Soup." And this individual, who is an individual, gets raised up amongst a bunch of space jockeys, space opera fellas, and he gets into their midst, and the soup comes along on an assembly line, and each one of them, of course, take off their plate of soup like that, you see. And this plate of soup that appeared in front of him goes on down the assembly belt. It gets into the works and gears at the end of the assembly belt. Nothing like this has ever happened before, so they don't even have a fuse on the thing. And it flashes back and closes out the power plant of the building. And because that power plant goes, there's no way to stop the atomic fission on the main power plant, and it blows up the whole town. And they ask this fellow why he did it. He says, I didn't like soup. And you've heard the old corny gag. Then comes the revolution, you all eat strawberries. The fellow says, I don't like strawberries. Huh? Then comes the revolution, you like strawberries. Now there we have an example of building a society so flimsily, but apparently so strongly, that any action contrary to its general will blows it up. Well, would you say that's a very strong society? But similarly, the will and worth of one individual, the will and worth of one individual can always overthrow a large, complicated, interdependent society. That is about the easiest thing that can happen. Providing that individual can only come up to revolution. And there is no provision in the society for leadership. Therefore, what we are doing today is not necessarily providing the leaders of tomorrow, but we are raising the general level of responsibility at the same time that all other social actions seek to depress it. We ourselves are keeping something in balance that is more important, probably even than I understand. I know it's important. That is all I know. If the future society cannot have men capable of sufficient responsibility to be entrusted with the tremendous weapons and violence of which the society is capable, then the society, the more it improves, the more it'll blow itself up. In other words, we put a stop right on top of the society. We have then, perforce, a police state. All we have are police, police, police. What are these police trying to do? They're trying to keep individuals from doing things. Why do they have to keep individuals from doing things? Because individuals are so irresponsible, they're liable to do anything. And that's why a police state grows. And what we are doing is the only impulse I know of in the society at this time, which is actually directly and straightly pointed at the heart of the future police state. In a society where individuals are free, where individuals can be rehabilitated, where individuals can still think, you can still have leadership. One individual can be selected by other intelligent individuals to represent them, or one individual, by his natural native ability, can at least control some sphere of the social order around him. And unless this social order is controlled, unless there is a sphere that a Thetan can bring order into, you have nothing but chaos. So all this beautifully planned advance will wind up in chaos unless we do our job. You wonder, what is our answer to atomic fission? Well, the only answer we have to atomic fission is that an individual adequately processed, perhaps up to, well, theta clear will do it, is not susceptible to radiation. In other words, he himself is to a marked degree radiation proof. That doesn't mean his town can't be blown up, but it does mean that he's to some degree radiation proof. But there's something far more important than this, and that is that we make an individual who can create a sphere of order when we make a clear. He can control or bring order to a larger perimeter. Now, where a society is composed of people who are capable of bringing order into their affairs and into the society, into their groups, we, of course, have a stable society. We don't have a chaos. The only thing there capable of bringing order, the individual, is made capable of bringing order by Scientology. And being able to have an orderly sphere of action, of course, things run, and run better, and there's a better responsibility for things. I wouldn't think twice if there were a clear in the White House. I know the guy'd figure out some way to keep his nation from being blown up. I could relax. So could you. I'm not saying that this our direction should be straight into the teeth of modern society, and that we should grab all these politicians and process them at once. It'd be a good idea, but it isn't very feasible. We are running a parallel plan to this. We're considering that the modern society will more or less pitch on its silly head sooner or later for lack of individuals. And we just want to make sure that there are some around capable of straightening things out. That's the least we're asking for and the least we're hoping for. Now, whatever we do from there on, wonderful. To lay down a big plan here and say this is the organization and this is what we're going to do and our steps are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's saying that none of you have a right to think or plan, too. The only thing I can do is hold the communication lines of Scientology and its service in an orderly state. That's all I can do, and that I am engaged in doing. I can use these communication lines for your use. and we can keep the show on the road, just in Scientology. But this is an inside perimeter. This is an internal. How about where Scientology influences things outside? Do you know that if you processed a very small percent of the society, that enough order would result from their action alone to bring sensible actions about on the part of the society? We're almost talking in terms of mysticism. It's not totally traceable. Where an individual is capable of bringing order, there is order, whether he brings it or not. Where an individual is only capable of bringing disorder, there is disorder, whether he makes it disorderly or not. You know, there's an old process known as invent a problem of comparable magnitude to that problem. It's a nice process. It has never been superseded. It's a wonderful process, actually. It has no substitutes. There are different ways of running a case so as to get off the succumb postulates, as in ACC clear procedure, which will now be taught at the HCSBSDN level. There's ways of doing that, but there's more than this, much more than this. We run this individual on the basis of invent a problem of comparable magnitude. Now, we run it badly. This is the wrong way to run it, but it still works. Invent a problem comparable magnitude to your wife. Actually, that's not correct, but we'll run. Invent a problem comparable magnitude to your wife. He's having lots of trouble with his wife. He actually is not causing too much trouble, but he's having trouble with his wife, let's say. We run him on a problem comparable magnitude to your wife. Proper way to run it is to that problem, get to describe the problem, problem changes, and so forth, and that's all very proper. But this older form works, and auditors have trouble using the more complicated, more modern form. So just remember that this old one works. And you say to him, invent a problem comparable magnitude to your wife. He does. You say, thank you. Invent a problem comparable magnitude to your wife. He does. Thank you. Invent a problem comparable magnitude to your wife. He does. Thank you. You run this for a few hours, 2 hours, something like this. Case is not running too difficult fashion. And all of a sudden, his wife straightens out. You didn't process her. You get this? You never laid your hands on her as an auditor, but she straightens out. Quite remarkable. Similarly, if she was having trouble with him, even though she was apparently not causing it, we process her, problem comparable magnitude to your husband, problem comparable magnitude to your husband. All of a sudden, he straightens out, and we never processed him. Now, that's a weirdie. I've got so many case histories on this, I'm getting overloaded. Somebody asked me the other day if I wanted some case histories. Sure, I always want some case histories. We'll put them someplace. See, it's so new and strange for a study of the mind, so fantastic for a study of the mind to validate itself, that hardly anybody in the field of the mind or spirit is interested in validation. They don't know anything about it. They say, what's this? It's hard to believe that in Freudian analysis that nobody ever gave anybody a before test. And after they'd had 5, 6, 7 years, whatever they're supposed to get, they gave them an after test. It's hard to believe that that never took place, but I can tell you that if it ever took place, the results were so bad that they never published them. We've got file cases full of this stuff, not just in this country. And I'm always happy to see more data. I'm always happy to see more cases. But this one is still being studied. We have new value to it now, this idea of bring order. By the way, that is the motto of HCO. This idea of bringing order in an individual's own life and then have this order spring out on other perimeters broader than himself is an open and shut thing. I mean, we observe it. That's why I say you don't have to clear everybody in the world. If you just released a bunch of people, something would happen. If you clear a few people in a town, what happens to the town? Now, because these people are going around being very active, perhaps, but something happens. Definitely something happens. A greater order is generated. We have a greater sphere of order occur as a result of this. Now, leadership is totally the action of bringing order, or it is not leadership. People speak of the leader of the mob. A mob doesn't have a leader. A mob bent on destruction does not select a leader. It selects someone that they can push around. Always. Providing he will also kill them. This is an unhappy fact about mobs. I don't speak idly. That's technical truth. But a destructive mob, or any large mob, if called upon to elect somebody, normally elects somebody they can push around, but who will destroy them. As an example, elected company officers in the American War Between the States. The first officers, they wouldn't even elect West Pointers in the Southern Army. They'd elect some politician sort of type of guy who would immediately lead him straight in through the wrong ravine at the wrong point of the attack. After a while, why, some of the survivor types survived, and when they came to elect officers, why, it was a different election. Most of the guys who wanted to be killed had, by that time, been killed. Now, here we have this impulse of man toward destruction. Unless he has responsible and reliable leadership, unless he can turn in his own affairs toward areas that are being led, you get the idea. If he wants to do banking, he turns to a bank where they are doing banking, not to a modern American bank. You see, modern American banks don't do banking. I don't know what they do, but they don't do banking. Banking is the process of loaning and collecting and handling and passing on currency. And modern banks are mostly concerned with buying and selling and owning and managing trust funds and real estate and things. It's quite weird. And where do you go to borrow money? Lord knows. Lord knows. If you want some money, I don't know, you go down to the bank and they'll look at you blankly and say, "What are you doing here?" No, you'd look for somebody in the field of banking. You would look for some banking area where order existed and that was being led or managed. And if you wanted some accounting done, you would look around and you would find an area of accounting where you had somebody handling an orderly area of accounting, don't you see? And in that way you could function. But where you look around and find an accountant who says you do all the work and then you send us a check, or you find irresponsibilities this way and that way, your society tends to fall apart. And then people try to push it back together again by making it all equal or making it a welfare state. Things start to go broke. Inflation starts to happen. Big emergency measures have to take place. And the society finds itself victimized by some odd practice. Doesn't matter what they call it. But it'll be something that takes all the responsibility away from everybody and puts it nowhere. Now, we're directly in the teeth of such a movement. We are not a political movement, however. Not even vaguely. What we're creating is somebody who can live a better life. Well, that's all right, and it's worthwhile right in that sphere. But we might as well look a little bit further. What we are creating is not necessarily the leaders of the world. It has nothing to do with that. We're creating somebody who can take responsibility in his own sphere of action. We're creating people who can take responsibility for things. And if we create them as fast as the society says the individual can have no responsibility, we'll still keep the ship of state from going down with all flags struck. You know, leadership and clearing are not necessarily in the same basket at all. Since you could have a society totally made up of clears, and you probably have no leaders. Get the idea? But where you can only make a sprinkling, you would undoubtedly be making some leaders. There's some difference here, in other words. An individual who will take responsibility generally does, and he keeps things rolling. But you know, it's all right to say leadership, but what is it? What is it? Curious thing. But do you know that there have been tomes written on this subject? You go into the U.S. Army, the U.S. Navy, the U.S. Air Force, the African Air Force, the African Army, the Royal Air Force, the De Gaulle's Army, any of these, and you're going to find books on leadership. Boy, they crack your back, these books. They're mostly issued to NCOs, not non-commissioned officers. Commissioned officers are so far departed from it, they wouldn't know it. They generally write them. Here are all these tomes on the subject of leadership, and they're little gimmicks, and little who's-its, and you never do this, but you do that. And there's tremendous numbers of rules. But nobody ever said what leadership was. If we're going into a society which is all but leaderless, we better know what a leader is. A leader is somebody who can assume responsibility for his sphere of influence. That's awful simple, isn't it? He can assume responsibility for his sphere of influence. I'll tell you that in a central organization, if your registrar and assistant registrar cannot take responsibility for every reactive bank in the country, they don't do very much. That's an awful mouthful, though. Take responsibility for every reactive bank in the country? And yet that's what it takes. It's very hard to get an organization up to taking any responsibility because an organization itself is not responsible. Only the terminals in it are responsible. Now, only HCO actually takes full responsibility for all certificates ever issued. That's quite a zone of responsibility, isn't it? All certificates ever issued to whom or what or why or for which? Well, it falls down every once in a while. It couldn't help but fall down every once in a while because what? It falls out of communication. So we get the next attribute of leadership. In the presence of leadership, communication is possible. Well, it certainly looks funny, isn't it, when you hear about the general walks down the ranks and no private must talk to him, and then we say the general is the leader of those privates? Ha, 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 ha. Maybe their sergeants are, but not the general. Why? Because privates can't talk to him. Communication. A leader must be able to give and receive communication. It's very simple, isn't it? Give and receive communication. Of course, that's within his ability to have time enough to hear everything that is said to him. But nevertheless, he can hear quite a bit. And he certainly must have that ability to communicate. Now, furthermore, he must have the ability to have affinity for the people he is leading. And he must be able to inspire some affinity in them for him. And the goals and things he stands for must be quite real. They must be real. They must be to some degree obtainable. The agreement has to be fairly good on these goals. And in addition to that, he must be capable of a reality on the plight of the people he is trying to lead. What's their reality? And recognizing their reality clearly, he need not necessarily fall into it at all. One of the great empires of all time had a fellow named Suleiman in charge of it. Suleiman the Magnificent, the Turkish Empire, early part of the 16th century. He shattered the Turkish Empire, actually. He had one great fault. One great fault. He never did appoint any task within human possibility. He got a lot done, but he shattered the whole thing. In other words, he never took a look at or got a reality on what people could really do. So therefore, he fell away from being a leader of that particular nation. But leaders do not just lead nations. Every family has to have a leader, unless it's composed of clears. Got it? Two people can come to an agreement, but two people can't plan. Let me clue you, they can't do it. Got to be somebody in the final analysis who makes the last decision. Otherwise, that decision is never made, and all activities undertaken are flimsy for that one reason. Unless they're both cleared, somebody's got to make the last decision. If they're both cleared, they'd both see the perfect or near-perfect decision, and they'd come to agreement on it once. Nobody'd have to make a decision. But somebody's got to make a decision in an area. Every schoolroom needs a leader of some kind or another. And we're going to look here in the very near future of Scientology at some leadership. It's an interim condition. It's not a final condition. It's just an interim condition. You'll find people who are getting clear or being clear, starting to take leadership in their own zones of action. They're taking more and more responsibility for what's going on around them and taking more and more responsibility to become more and more leaders. And because they're surrounded by people who aren't clear, and because they're surrounded by people who are in doubt or feel insecure or muddied up or scared or something like this, they'll find out that by their own ability to communicate, their own ability to have affinity, and their own concept of reality and the agreement they have with their fellows, by these tokens alone, they will lead, whether they want to or not. And the funny part of it is, the more they lead, the less gold braid you'll see them wearing. Because gold braid is to identify a leader who can't be identified otherwise. Now, as we look at this, we look at our next step up the line. Our next step up the line will be influencing spheres of action, intentionally or unintentionally. Intentionally, I hope. And influencing these spheres of action, we should better and better understand what we are doing. People start turning to us for some idea of what to do or where to go or what to say. It's all right to keep saying, well, you make up your mind. It's all right to say, well, you have self-determinism. Why don't you make up your mind about it? That's all right. Sooner or later, to get the show on the road, you're going to have to say, and the clearer you get, the more willing you will be to say, black, white, yes, no. Get the idea? Now, the pattern of central organizations is getting more and more set because we have more and more experience. We know better and better what goes on, what problems we face, what we should be doing. We're better and better. And oddly enough, as the people come up the line, really the less they need the concrete pattern, because they would recognize what was right in the first place. But until everybody is beautifully crystal clear, some pattern is necessary, and there must always be a pattern on which we agree we are communicating. And if we agree on what we're communicating with and how we are communicating and ways to communicate, we have at least got a disciplined communication one way or the other. And communication can't just spatter all over the place. It's got to go to something and come from somewhere. And therefore, we really face an interim period. And if we're going to get the show on the road at all, whether we're clear or not, just by reason of what we know, we have to take a little wider responsibility in this earth today, a little more responsibility for the reactive banks of our fellows, a little more responsibility for the state of order in our immediate vicinities, and if we do that, we can win. I want us to win. I think we can. It doesn't seem to me to be a very difficult job. It's a job you're already well embarked upon. To a marked degree, you were already quite familiar with this. But maybe you were looking at it intellectually for the first time. If you are, you can confront it. Thank you very much for being at this Congress. Thank you for being such a good audience. Thank you for listening so patiently. I probably won't see you again in a Congress for a very long time. However, thank you for coming to this one. I hope you found it worthwhile. I have. Thank you.